This is the Eating Well podcast number 12, replies to your questions.
We're back. I'm Steve.
And I'm Michelle.
And you can get to our website at eatingwellpodcast.blogspot.com, or you can send us an email at eating.well@gmail.com. And today we're going to respond to just some of the email that we get in, and we've got kind of a backlog.
Yeah.
We've been gone a while.
Yeah, we really do appreciate all the feedback we get, the kudos, the questions, the comments. It's all wonderful to read.
You know, some of you have commented that some of the earlier editions are offline. I understand that the host for those shows went down. I've still got them. I'll upload them to a new host and update the RSS feed so that you can get them easily.
Yeah, we've been out of touch for a couple months now, so we're ready to get caught up. We thought we'd take some time to answer some questions because they were awesome, and there's some good information that we can throw at you pretty quickly. And you had the questions, so we figured hundreds of others probably do too. So, what's the first question you have, Steve?
The first one is about daily food grams from Anthea. She says, "I love your podcast. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It really has changed the way I'm choosing to eat. I now use the Nutrition Data website as well. Thank you. I've tried again and again to find the daily grams I need to try and target, but now, where can I find a complete list? You have mentioned a fiber, 25 to 35 grams a day, protein, 50 to 60 grams a day, but I can't find any amount of carbohydrates and fats. I'm trying for a 1,500 calorie diet. Thank you, guys, Anthea."
That's actually some good feedback. So first of all, I just want to touch on the fact that, thank you for listening to our previous podcast.
Yeah.
And there is some good information already out there about how much fiber one would need per day or grams of protein. And a big reason why we haven't talked too much about how many grams of protein you need or fat per day is because it's somewhat controversial. It depends on who you talk to. I'm of the opinion that you need, let's say, 70% of your calorie intake per day from carbohydrate. You hear a lot of low-carb this and low-carb that, and people oftentimes forget that fruits and vegetables are carbohydrate.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons. If you really want to get a nice, clear answer, there's a couple of websites that I recommend. First and foremost, you already alluded to my favorite, www.nutritiondata.com. They're just wonderful for all kinds of nutrition information, tracking, planning, etc. Also, the government does have a couple of sites, the RDA, the Recommended Dietary Allowance, that most people know about. Their website is www.nal.usda.gov. And finally, the big website that was in the news this past year was mypyramid.gov. So it's the brand new food guide pyramid. My personal opinion is it's somewhat too informative. There's a lot of information. It's not that user-friendly, but it is pretty helpful. So I would check out all three of those, but I'm guessing you'll end up once again at nutritiondata.com. And Steve's so awesome at maintaining the website, I'm sure he'll list those for you.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the thing about the new pyramid is it includes exercise in the pyramid.
Yes, in the foundation.
Yeah, that's one of the big differences. And, of course, we support that.
Absolutely. So, yes, thanks for your question.
Thank you, Anthea. The next message is from Heather. She says, "Hi, I've recently started listening to your podcast. I enjoy it and find the info you give very straightforward and helpful. Thanks." Well, you're very welcome. My question is, do you know of a good calorie counting, low-fat menu planning website? I used to use eDiets, but I did not find it very user-friendly. I currently use craftfoods.com. It's easy to use, but it's full of brand name suggestions and a lot of extra snacks I don't need. I'm interested in a site where you can plug in basic recipes. A printable shopping list would be an added bonus. So, again, we're going to point you back to nutritiondata.com.
Absolutely. And so what did she ask for? Calorie counting, low-fat menu planning website. Yeah. Nutritiondata.com.
Nutritiondata.com, CalorieKing.com.
You know, Calorie King I've only used a couple of times. However, I have several patients who currently use it, CalorieKing.com, and they love it. They're sending me their food records weekly, and I love the way it's broken down into how far you were from your budget. You know, you were under by 50 calories, and this percentage was fat, and this percentage was carbs, etc. And it's, from what I'm gathering, very user-friendly.
Yeah. And there's also additional software from Calorie King, and there's also a tracker from My Pyramid. But, you know, all of these websites depend on you using them, so your willingness to use them. So which one is the best? The one you're willing to use and the one you enjoy using. That one's the best.
Right.
And it depends on you accurately including everything you did eat, not everything you planned to eat.
And not only that, but you not want to just include the good stuff you ate, but also the not-so-good stuff, so you have an accurate measure at the end of the day. And then the tracker you were just mentioning, you can still just go to mypyramid.gov, and there is a link to the tracker.
Right. And if this is something that you can access multiple times a day, that makes your record keeping more effective for planning purposes.
Oh, definitely.
So, thank you, Heather, for that one. And now we have an email from Brooks. And he's got a question. He says he wants to gain weight.
Yeah, you know, it really is true. I was reading his message earlier, and he's saying, you know, he can relate that most of the country, if not a good portion of the world, because we do get emails from other countries as well. I mean, we're in California, however. Those of you out there that are not in the United States, you know that a lot of us Americans are on some kind of weight loss or weight management kick, but there are people out there once in a while that are actually trying to gain weight. So what does he have to say?
He says, I'm trying to eat more healthy, and your show is a great way for me to become more food conscious. My problem is that you assume, perhaps reasonably so, I know I'm a rarity, that all of your listeners are either trying to maintain a healthy weight or are trying to lose weight. I would actually like to gain weight. I'm a 21-year-old male, I'm 5'9", and I weigh about 130 pounds, maybe even less. I exercise regularly, 3 times a week at the gym for about 2 hours each session, including both cardio and weight training. And I eat quite healthy. I feel great, and I feel healthy, but I'd like to increase muscle and fat, if that's possible. Should I even bother trying to gain weight if I'm already very healthy? Might it compromise my health? If it is reasonable for me to try and gain weight, how should I go about it?
So before we move on, I kind of want to address that question for a moment. It sounds like you're also concerned about your weight and thinking, well, do I even really want to gain weight? There is such a thing as being underweight. You don't hear about it very often, especially in men, healthy men. However, you can look online and determine your BMI or your body mass index. What's considered healthy is between 18 and 24.99. So if you track your current height and weight, and I know you said it in there, but I just can't recall off the top of my head where that falls on the chart. If your BMI is currently under 18, you definitely do want to gain weight. If it's closer to 20, 22, 23, it's fine.
Now, it is possible to be overweight by BMI standard, high BMI, and still very healthy.
Oh, sure, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Sure.
He has an extremely high, he's in the obese, maybe even extremely obese category, but he's very muscular, so. But looks like Brooks is concerned about muscle mass and really just maintaining a healthy weight. So I would suggest that, first of all, you just determine with your doctor where your weight should be and what you're comfortable with, and then go from there.
And Brooks' email continues on saying, I have one suggestion. You frequently talk about the nutritional values of food and suggest how much of a certain food should be eaten, if at all, for those wishing to maintain a healthy weight or to lose weight. Instead of limiting your advice to these types of people, which I admit is likely the vast majority, also try to mention how much of a certain food could be eaten by someone in my situation who's not worried about weight gain and might actually profit from some extra calories, fat, protein, and or carbs. Thanks.
So that's actually a really good point. And of course, you know that you can gain weight the good old-fashioned way by eating the wrong foods, but you have to keep in mind we are the Eating Well podcast. We're looking at health and nutrition here. So once in a while, I do get clients that come to me and want to gain weight but still maintain a healthy diet. There's a few things I always throw at them. The first two that I'll tell you about is adding in some healthy nuts, because there's some unhealthy nuts out there too. So first and foremost, walnuts and almonds are my biggest recommendations. And you're going to determine how many you want to put into your diet in a day, how many you can afford for your calories and how much weight you do want to gain. But I'd say a couple of ounces per day would be fine. And then whole beans, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Black beans, garbanzo beans, kidney beans.
And they're great because there's such a variety. There's so many things you can do with them. And they're kind of like the chameleon food. They go with about everything.
Yeah, eat them plain, add them to salads, add them to stir fries.
Yeah.
Go crazy. I do recommend, however, if you're going to buy them in a can like I do these days, because it's so easy to do so and it's inexpensive, that you rinse them off, because they do have some sodium packed in there, the salt.
You can also try dried fruit, excellent source of nutrition, higher in calories, so they do promote weight gain if you have a reasonable amount of them, but it's nutrition. It's good nutrition.
Absolutely. So you're definitely looking at healthy options here that are very calorie dense.
That's
you
right.
can eat a lot of them without filling up so much. Peanut butter, Steve mentioned earlier.
See, this is where if you're trying to maintain weight, it's all about portion control.
Absolutely.
But folks in Brooke's position who are trying to add some weight, peanut butter is a pretty good way to do it.
And I have to say that you want to get the good peanut butter. If you look at the list of ingredients, which we're going to talk about later, it should just say peanuts,
right?
Maybe
Instead of some sort of oils or partially hydrogenated, you need to avoid those.
Not to really badmouth any particular brand, but those that are really popular, like the Jiffy and the Skip, etc.,
yeah.
that are going to have a long shelf life. If you look at the list of ingredients, they'll talk about hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated oils. Those you want to avoid at all costs. So just get the real old-fashioned peanut butter. Another good option, Brooks, you might consider is brown rice, whole grain brown rice. Once again, great healthy nutrition for you, but calorie dense. Soy beans, soy snacks, tofu, soy-based meat substitutes. If you don't want to just have the plain old white block of tofu, there's a lot to choose from these days that are soy-based, and they're typically moderately high in calories. So
you got to be careful, because some things are simply use soy to not have meat in them and provide protein or texture, and they're otherwise fried, fatty, salty, not necessarily a good choice, but very calorie dense.
Right.
So you got to do some more label reading on that.
And then the last thing that you could use but don't go too crazy with is the fruit juice. It's always best to eat the whole fruit in general, but if you're looking at weight gain, you can stand to have 8 to 12 ounces of fruit juice per day. It's still high in natural sugar, so you don't want to gain weight at the risk of developing other risk factors. So,
now,
good questions.
Now, if you're going to add these calories and you're not going to burn them, your body is going to convert that into fat.
Yeah, and it sounds like in Brooke's case, he has somewhat of a faster metabolism and he is working out consistently, so if you're really just looking to gain weight, I would definitely go with the nuts and the whole beans and the dry fruit and the peanut butter. And you can even add your protein in, stick with the leaner proteins, but you can have more of it.
Is there a way that you can measure this? Is there a blood test that you're aware of that you might check with your doctor on measuring metabolism or making sure you've got a balance?
Oh, yeah, you can definitely test your basal metabolic rate, your resting rate as well, but your doctor isn't going to have the tools to do it.
Who should you go to?
Sometimes physical therapy offices have it. We're actually currently in the process of buying one at my day job.
Yeah.
But you can just look. You can ask your doctor, and they'll know where to send you. And it is a nominal fee. Sometimes even at your gym, if it's a fancier gym, they'll be able to do it for you.
All right. Thank you, Brooks. Our next one is all the way from Mexico. Moni writes in, "Hello, Michelle and Steve. I want to tell you your podcast is really interesting and inspiring. I've been a vegetarian for over 12 years, and I've had some problems in keeping my diet balanced. Last year, I discovered I was anemic, so slowly, I've been trying to improve my eating habits and bring more variety to my meals. A podcast on easy, balanced menus would be very interesting, on how to plan meals for a busy person." She says, "Thank you for sharing your experience and knowledge. It's very helpful. Hope you continue with the good work. Take care."
Monica.
So, all right.
Okay, so there's actually a couple different topics in there. Balanced menus is one, and then meals for a busy person is kind of another. I know we'd like to have a balanced meal plan and be busy and have it all work out. It is possible, but that's a pretty long conversation. So let me just point out that she's asking for variety. An easy way to go about that, especially for a vegetarian, is to get a variety of colors. So you don't want to just have yellow bananas and yellow squash every day. You know, throw some red cabbage in there and some green bell peppers and try to get different colors of both fruits and vegetables for your variety. But as far as the balance is concerned, you want to make sure that some of your calories are coming each day from some sort of lean protein, having some whole grains in there, your fruits and vegetables, and also some non-fat or low-fat dairy.
Yeah, I really like the color method. It's so easy. You know, if you cover all of the basic ones you can think of, orange, yellow, green, blue, you know, you're pretty well covered.
You know, there's another good website that's the Five-A-Day, fiveaday.org, and they have a great system for setting that up, a list of the grocery store type thing. But if you take your shopping cart to the fresh produce section, try to get as many colors as possible, you're getting plenty of the phytochemicals and macronutrients from each different foods.
And be willing to try things that you're not familiar with. I'm not saying go nuts and buy 27 kiwis if you've never had one before, but be willing to try new stuff. Look it up on nutrition data and see what its values are.
And I really do like your suggestion about planning meals for a busy person, because this is a question I get a lot. And I do consider myself a fast food eater, but not from fast food restaurants and chains, yeah. Because we do tend to eat on the go. So this is something we'll have to talk about pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, you know, I take some criticism for my fast food, you know, my fast food methods. Like, I'm very much into ready-to-go, prepackaged grocery, you know, open it, consume what's inside.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of foods.
Tuna in a pouch, salad already cut and washed and prepared. It costs a few extra bucks, but you know what? There's a lot you can eat out of a pouch these days that's very healthy for you.
And it's a matter of convenience.
Yep.
And that's it. I'm willing to pay for it. You know, 16 ounces of carrots in a bag, already washed, clean, ready to go, portable. That's what I'm looking for.
Yep.
Because the alternative to that choice is a problem. The volume and readiness of bad choices is so vast that this is a far better solution.
I agree.
Thank you, Monica. Our next question is from Matt, who writes, "Hi, Michelle and Steve. I have heard that the two best oils to cook with are extra virgin olive oil and canola oil."
Yes.
"I have also heard that if oil smokes, it can create harmful free radicals, which can be inhaled."
Yes.
"I can't seem to avoid the smoke. My food smokes no matter how low the flame I use. Could that smoke I see really just be steam from the moisture in the food?"
Yes.
"Do you have any tips for using these oils while avoiding the smoke-free radical factor? Also, sometimes I use these oils in the oven. Do you think that it's safe? Do you think olive oil and canola oil... Do you think that olive oil and canola oil..."
Olive and canola oil?
Yeah, those. "Do you think olive and canola oil are the two most healthful oils?"
Yes.
He continues on. "Hold I'm on. A ovo-lacto Sorry. Vegetarian."
Stop. Before you move on to the next part of his question, I just wanted to say that you did mention that the flame is low already. So if you're getting smoke that's harmful, it's because of a high flame. From what I know of oils and cooking with them, you don't need to be concerned about olive oil or canola oil in the oven. And if you're burning them on a stove that is too hot, whether it be electric or gas, the flame is too high. If it's too hot, you can burn it and it's going to cause trouble. Otherwise, if your flame is already low and you're still seeing quote-unquote smoke, it's probably steam that I wouldn't worry about.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if there's something else on the pan, too.
There could be buildup, and actually, I have to tell you, maybe it's worth finding out about your pans.
Yeah.
Because some Teflon, once it starts peeling, if you're using a metal utensil, your Teflon peels and that smokes, it's very dangerous. I actually lost some birds because of that. The Teflon burnt and killed my little animals, so... this is something you really do want to look into. If you think it's from the oil, I wouldn't be concerned if it's steam, but if it really is your Teflon or something else burning off, maybe you need to invest in some new, good quality pans.
And Matt's email goes on to say, I'm a ovo-lacto vegetarian, and if you don't know what that means, you can listen to our Alternative Diets podcast. He says, I'm a ovo-lacto vegetarian. I'm just wondering if there are any things I should be careful about getting into my diet. I know I get enough protein, and I supplement B vitamins and use flax oil to get omega-3s. Is there anything else I should be careful about? Thanks so much. I love the show. It's entertaining and informative. Keep up the good work. Matt.
It's a little confusing question, but I'll just assume that since you're getting enough protein and you're vegetarian, you're also eating your vegetables. Some people throw around that word vegetarian kind of loosely and they say, well, I don't eat meat. Well, hopefully you are eating your vegetables and fruit and getting in plenty of fiber. So it sounds like your protein is covered. I'll assume you're getting your fruits and veggies, some whole grains, some dairy or dairy substitute, and pretty well balanced.
Yeah, because vegetarian doesn't automatically mean healthful diet.
Oh, no way.
You could eat Snickers and Diet Coke all your life and be vegetarian.
It's meat-free.
That's right. Not that we're promoting that.
No.
So thank you, Matt, for that email. Next one is from Mike. He writes, I travel extensively and rely on food bars for meals when I can't find time or a location to eat. What is the best meal replacement bars to eat that will sustain me while not making me fat?
This is a great question, and I want to first say any bar out there should never be considered a meal. It's more of a snack replacement. There's not enough nutrition in one of those bars. Any bar out there that I've ever seen that can be considered a meal, it should hold you over between meals. So there's a couple of bars that Steve and I both love, which is the Luna Bar. You know, it's marketed towards women, but it's made by Clif Bar, and it's wonderful soy-based bar, and last I checked, they're all about 180 calories each.
Yeah, and there's pretty good variety, and they taste really good.
Delicious. So if one doesn't fill you up, it doesn't mean you should have two or three to make it a balanced meal. Really just have these to hold you over until you can sit down and have a nice meal.
Yeah. And a little bit of planning might do you some good, too. If you can bring food with you that you know is good and nutritious, or if you can plan to have a nutritionally dense meal to hold you over longer so you won't be as hungry in a time where you don't have opportunity to make a better choice.
Yeah. Another one I really like is the Kashi Go Lean bars. They're a little bigger. The texture is also nice. But I guess if you want to just play it by rule of thumb, you want something that has low grams of sugar, high grams of fiber, that still tastes good, that's less than 300 calories. Going back to the Luna Bar, they're under 200, even better. So, you know, carry one around with you, but don't consider it breakfast.
No. Do you have a favorite Luna?
I like the Lemon Zest.
Lemon Zest.
I think it's called Lemon Zest.
Yeah.
They used to have one called Nuts Over Chocolate, and I haven't seen it lately.
I have seen Nuts Over Chocolate, and that's one of my favorites. I also like the Peppermint Stick.
Oh, yes. I love Peppermint Stick.
Do you have a favorite Kashi Go Lean?
Nope.
I've had one, but I didn't really get into them.
I'm pretty favorable of any of the ones with peanuts or peanut butter.
Peanuts are good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike, for that email. Our next email is from Nancy. She says, similar to environmental control, do you have tips, advice on how to eat well when traveling on business?
Good one.
How do you maintain food environmental control when you have to travel for business quite frequently? So this is this has a lot to do with planning and, like she said, environmental control.
So there's two components to that. There's not eating things that are given to you for free at work conferences and meetings and being taken out to dinner. And so, you know, subtracting things from your environment that could put the weight on or be unhealthy. And then there's adding things in, which is my favorite because it's very doable. You're in control of this completely. So it depends. Are you going to be in your hotel room for one day, for 1 week? But if you're willing to do a few easy things, it's very doable. The first one is to travel with some dry fruit and or nuts. They're very easy and portable and healthy, and they're going to hold you over for a while. And even more importantly than that, if possible, when you're in transit from the airport to your location, stop at a grocery store and stock up with things that you can carry. You mentioned the carrots earlier. Any kind of cut up fruits or vegetables, once again, it's going to cost you a little more, but it's already done for you.
It's ready to go.
You don't have to be a food finder. If you aren't staying in a hotel and you're just traveling a lot, the airports are really supplying what we're demanding these days. They are going to have apples and oranges and bananas.
It depends. Some airports have it, some airports don't, and it depends on where in the terminal you are.
Yeah, I know. I do a lot of traveling myself, and I haven't had too much of a problem so far. However, I always notice how expensive it is.
Yes.
Very, very pricey, but you just have to be willing to pay for your health, and you are worth it.
I noticed the airports that have more of those sort of amenities have a greater abundance of really bad choices.
Oh, sure, there's always going to be, no matter if you're at a fast food joint or a restaurant or someone's house or a party or an airport. 9 of the 10 items that you're going to get, unless you're at a vegan potluck, are going to be unhealthy options.
Right.
So you have to be the food finder, unfortunately, be willing to pay a little extra for the goodies. But they are out there. You just have to find them. They're a little tough to find sometimes.
I wouldn't recommend counting on the availability of things at places like airports or hotels. You need to do some planning and make sure you have these things with you or include in your plan going outside of your itinerary to go get them.
That's true. That's a really good point. And that's, I guess, where the dry fruit and the nuts could come into play.
Yeah.
Having things as backup on reserve in case it's not there, because you cannot depend on it. You're exactly right. The last thing is, if you are being treated to a meal or you have an account, you know, expense account, whatever the case may be, once you get to sit down and eat, it might not be at your home, in your kitchen, with your home healthy menus being planned. However, chances are you can order off the menu or make some substitutions and order your grilled lean proteins with a double side of veggies and, you know, skip the alcohol and dessert, and you can actually be somewhat satisfied when you leave.
And if you find a place that's got something good, get extra, bring some home with you, bring some with you on for your next leg of the trip.
Excellent idea. So if your flight serves a meal, but you know it's not going to be a healthy one, and you just had a great dinner somewhere, order one to go. That's a great tip. Thanks, Nancy.
The next email is from Peter. He says, Is it really cancerous to eat food that's burned? For instance, burnt cheese, hot dogs that are way overcooked, and even Cajun food, I guess. I'm mostly a vegetarian. I was once a vegan for 2 years. So
I guess that's where the hot dogs did not come into play.
That's right. That was not a hot dog time of his life.
I don't know about you, Steve. I don't know a whole lot about this. I've heard that if you overcook something on a barbecue outside and it's charbroiled and the black stuff, you know, is cancer-causing, and I definitely try to avoid it, but I honestly just don't even know the answer to this one.
You know, I know people that prefer that for taste texture reasons, but I don't. I know I've heard this before, but I haven't heard that we've got a landmark case that says yes it is, no it's not. So we don't know.
Yeah, I guess in the meantime, avoid that burnt, charbroiled.
It's certainly not going to make it any better for you.
Yeah.
Burning it to a crisp or charring it, it's not going to make it any better for you.
If you find out, Peter, let us know.
All right, thank you, Peter. And Megan writes in with a little feedback. Steve and Michelle, I'm listening to your exercise podcast right now. Well, probably not right now. I asked for a recumbent stationary bike for Christmas, and that's what I've got. I had two knee surgeries, and I used one throughout all of my formal physical therapy. Plus, like Steve, I can't do the elliptical. Boy, I just really can't.
I love it. Too bad. Sorry for you guys.
I feel like I'm going to fall over or break a leg or something. It just doesn't move the same way my body moves. It is awkward and painful for my knees. Amen to that. Thanks for recommending the recumbent bike, because people tend to look at me like I'm crazy as they aren't familiar with them. But I'm really just crazy about it. Thanks for all of the great info, Megan.
Thanks, Megan. Yeah, those recumbent bikes are wonderful. The elliptical, for those who can stand them, are great. My new favorite, by the way, we haven't really talked about it, is the Gazelle.
Huh.
People are loving the Gazelle.
Well, it's a lot more fun to do.
Yeah.
It's a funner motion. I don't know how to describe that. It's a more fun motion.
So, you know what? Any equipment that your body is comfortable with that you will do for any length of time, go for it. Have a ball. Thanks for writing in.
Thanks for writing in, Megan.
And finally, we have one last email from Marcia. It's a little lengthy, so let me try to break it up a little. It says, I have listened to about 4 of your podcasts so far, and I'd like to say thanks for a podcast that's both informative and easy to listen to. This morning, I listened to your Alternative Diets podcast and your response to the question from the hypoglycemic person who always feels hungry gave me an idea for a podcast suggestion. Even though I am not hypoglycemic, I have a similar problem in that once I begin eating, it's like I awaken an urge to eat and that I don't achieve a feeling of satiety when I should, even when I am eating things like nuts and whole grains. I think it might be good to have a podcast in which you discuss satiety and portion control and useful tips and tricks associated with that. I know that I do much better when I employ tricks like pre-portioning my nuts and telling myself that if I still feel hungry in 10 minutes, I can have something else, etc. It sounds a little bit like she's mentioning the one thing I hear about a lot is cravings. Like,
oh, yeah.
Once you eat a carb, you're going to crave more carbs, and it kind of just goes into a frenzy, so better just to not get started.
It's a lot of behavioralistic toying and games that go on with that, too.
Mm-hmm. And Marcia does already know the tips. Like, if you're a big nut person, you can't eat from the can or from the jar. You have to pull out that ounce first and just eat the ounce and leave the rest alone. Preferably take your ounce to work and eat them there and not try to just not eat in the kitchen.
And how common is the attitude of, well, I've already stepped outside of the rules, might as well not count this day, right?
Yeah, you feel like you've blown it for the meal or for the day, so you might as well just keep blowing it and start fresh tomorrow. You can actually start fresh the next meal or right that moment. It doesn't have to start on the next day or the next Monday or the first of the month.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly what she's talking about. She's talking about more of the craving. But I am very familiar with that sort of behavior.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've done that, you know.
And she also mentions, you know, after 10 minutes, should I really determine if I'm hungry or not? Give yourself about 20 minutes, actually. It takes that time for your stomach and your mind to connect, to realize that you really are satiated.
Okay. What are you going to do for that 20 minutes?
Good question. Stay out of the kitchen, whatever it is.
You have to use some subtractive environmental control.
You have to use some willpower as well. You can get on the phone with a friend, chew some gum so you're not going to put some more food in your mouth, go on a walk, watch your favorite TV program, but make sure it's mindful and it's not that you're sitting there with a bowl of food and going to continue to eat without thinking.
If you're going to be distracted by something, it has to be something unrelated to food or a behavior where you don't normally eat food. Like, some people normally eat food while they watch TV, so that's not a good choice. Some people normally eat food while they're at the computer. Not a good choice. A good one is to go for a walk. Because it's hard to go nibble at something at the refrigerator if you're out walking around the block.
Just don't take your wallet if you live near any food places. Just kidding. But those are actually good questions. I also like to recommend taking a bath or taking a shower or just laying down to read.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I can't eat and read at the same time.
Well, I probably could if I worked at it, but I'm not going to try.
Good. Okay, so Marcia actually goes on. She says, I have a question about healthy eating out for vegetarians. I have a hard time with this, in part because I am a lacto-ovo-vegetarian. If I am cold, I don't want a salad. That leaves no choices at all at many restaurants, and at others tend to leave things like fettuccine alfredo, eggplant parmesan, and spaghetti. Are there any tips for healthy eating out for people who don't necessarily get to choose the restaurant? This is a wonderful question. Marsha, I'm also a vegetarian. Well, I eat fish, so it doesn't really count. But a lot of times you're right. You just don't want that salad. A couple of my very favorite things to do is there's typically a portion on the menu that's just sides, side orders.
Right.
Grilled vegetables, steamed vegetables. And I just get a double order or even a triple order depending on how hungry I am.
You pay a little bit more for that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, it's still going to end up being less than an entree.
Yeah.
And if you like variety, you can get like a side of asparagus and a side of steamed broccoli. Get three different sides. And if there's leftovers, take them home for lunch the next day.
Now, that's not to say that all side orders are good options.
Oh, no, of course not.
Right. We all know about the classic side orders, which are just
mashed potatoes full of cream and butter.
Or, you know, potato skins or something
that. Something fried.
Appetizers pretty much are no man's land as far as making a good choice.
You know, and also most restaurants these days offer a baked potato.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, if you get the standard baked potato with the butter and the sour cream and the bacon, etc., it could be loaded full of fat. But you can just ask for a baked potato on the side with nothing on it and then get, once again, a side order of the grilled or steamed veggies and throw those on top. Squeeze a little lemon juice on there, you know, juice from your lemon. And it's pretty great, and that's very comforting and very warm and satisfying.
Make sure you eat the skin.
Eat the skin for the fiber. That's where a lot of the vitamins and minerals are, absolutely. The last part of Marsha's email says, another question. I try to buy healthy whole grain breads, but I have to shop in a normal supermarket, not a health food store. I read the ingredients and know to avoid high fructose corn syrup, but sometimes I see ingredients listed as corn syrup or corn sweetener. Are these other names for high fructose corn syrup, or are they something else? If something else, are they better, worse, or the same as molasses or brown sugar in bread? There don't seem to be any breads at the store that don't have some type of sweetener.
Hmm.
I really do suggest that you avoid the high fructose corn syrup at all costs. Unfortunately, you're right. It's in so many products out there. It is different than just plain corn syrup. It is different than corn sweetener. They're all corn-based.
Yeah.
But the high fructose corn syrup is the absolute sweetest, least expensive one that most manufacturers choose to use. And honestly, I don't eat a lot of bread products, but there is one in particular that I'm very fond of, and it's Milton's. Milton's bread, their whole grain breads, are at least 5 grams of fiber per serving. I honestly can't tell you if there's any corn sweetener in there in any form. But Oro Wheat is also a wonderful brand that's at most grocery stores. If it's in the first 3 items on the list of ingredients, any kind of corn sweetener, probably not the best option. If it's further down the list, I wouldn't be too concerned. But look at the fiber primarily. If there's at least 3 grams of fiber per serving, per slice, it's probably a fine product.
You might be able to order something over the internet. Some of the grocery delivery places or some of the bread houses have delivery options.
Sure.
But that's getting pretty committed to having bread. You might be just better off to make the best choice you can. Look at calories per serving, serving size, and fiber.
Yeah. Chances are there's probably some good food options. You just have to pick your battles.
Yeah.
So look for the fiber. See that the corn syrup is way far down on the list of ingredients, and you'll probably be A-okay.
And if you can't find one that really meets your nutritional needs, then you have to limit your intake of it.
And which you want to do anyway. Even if it's a great quality bread, you don't want to have half a loaf a day. Everything in moderation, even the good stuff.
Well,
thank you.
Except for fruits and vegetables.
True. Thanks, Marsha.
Thank you, Marsha.
Thanks, everyone, for your questions and feedback and comments. We do appreciate it.
Tune in next time when we're going to talk about volumetrics and what it is and how you can do it.
Oh, yeah. Marsha did ask about satiety and some tips for portion control, so we're definitely going to talk about that next. Excellent.
You can get to our website at eatingwellpodcast.blogspot.com, and you can send in your questions to eating.well@gmail.com. And we want to send out a special thanks to our hosts, archive.org and ourmedia.org. I understand that they're currently in some legal battle right now and could use your financial support. So if you appreciate having this podcast available for free, they're the ones that are making it available, and we really do appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Be well.
Be well.